Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For today's Images of the Past, we go back about 109 years to talk about the Homestake Mine and when production was shut down as the result of a labor dispute. Joining us for the conversation, we have SDPB's Brian Gevick in our Vermilion studio. Hey, Brian, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. Take us back more than 100 years and tell us a little bit about, put it in context, what else is sort of happening at this time in the country?
Well, you know, there was quite a bit of labor strife in the country at that time, and really going back into the 1880s now, especially in the miners' unions that were kind of predominant in the West, there was an outfit called the Western Federation of Miners. And they had a reputation for violence. They were blowing up company property at times. People were actually being killed during the 1880s and 1890s, and that violence was going back and forth. So there was quite a bit of strife in the mining industry, and you know, for a lot of good reasons. Wages were stagnant. You didn't get a raise. You could work as many hours as the mine said you had to work. Working conditions were not great. They did not have the same kind of safety standards that exist today by a long shot.
Which is saying something, because mining is a dangerous job as it is. So back then it must have really been. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, South Dakota hasn't really been known as a place where labor unions have really taken root. But there was a miners' union operating in Lead at Homestake, and they had a really good relationship with the company. That began to change as the company got wind of the possibility that a larger union was going to come in and try to organize, and that there might perhaps be a strike. Now, I spoke with Carolyn Weber, she's the director of Deadwood History, Inc., about this history and what happened after Homestake Mining Company locked out the workers and basically shut down the mine in 1909 and 1910. Carolyn, where does this story start?
Well, the lockout happened in 1909 and lasted into the early part of 1910. It started on November 24th, 1909. Mine Superintendent T.J. Greer had caught wind that some of the employees were not going to work at the mine with non-union employees. And so he thought, oh, there's an impending strike happening. So he thought, I'm going to beat them to the punch. And he announced in the newspaper on the 24th of November that the mine would close operations that evening. And indeed, it did.
Playing hardball just immediately with any whiff of union involvement at the mine, I gather.
Right, that's right. Management really wanted to maintain control of how the company was operating.
And on the union side of it, my understanding is that there was a large group, a union from outside the area. In other words, people that were not local were coming in and pressing for this union involvement.
Right. It was the Western Federation of Miners Union, and they came in from outside, like you said. They had been active in unions in the western part of the United States, mainly mine operations and of that sort. And although Homestake did have the Lead Miners Union, that started in 1877 when Hearst bought the company and began the Homestake Mining Company. And they were on their own until 1893, when they then joined up with the Western Federation of Miners and became known as Lead Miners Union Number 2 then.
Okay. I imagine that 1909, everything was in full swing at Homestake, that there were a lot of people working there. It must have had a really devastating impact on the community.
Yes, it did. There were, like you say, there were probably 1,500 to 2,000 employees that worked there. And at the time, everything was, like you say, very prosperous. It was in full production. And then just wham, overnight, the place was closed, the locked out for sure. And so this did devastate the families that lived there. Single men and families moved away. A lot of them did. They were getting some benefits from the union, but of course, those didn't last very long. And you know, when it closed, it was Thanksgiving, it was Christmas, it was that time of year.
Carolyn, how did this all get resolved?
Well, I think that the employees were starting to feel the pinch of not being employed and not having a steady income, and many of them did not want to leave the area to seek employment elsewhere, so they formed what was called the Loyalty League. There were about 500 of them at the time, and they had decided that they would drop out of the union, become non-union people, and they approached T.J. Greer with this, saying that, listen, we agree to go back to work. We have cut our ties with the union. Could you please open the mine again? And so Greer took this under consideration. And then on the 10th of January in 1910, he decided that, yes, we're going to open the mine back up again with a very skeleton crew at that time.
Did anything good come out of this? Did Homestake change its policies in some way because of this, the lockout?
Yeah, they did. They changed many of their policies, actually. I think it was a wake-up call for management. For instance, in 1910, all medical services that were provided by the Homestake Hospital were free to all workers and their dependents, so that was a very nice benefit that they received. And then they also started an aid fund. Each employee was charged just $1 a month for this, and the company put in $1,000 a month, and that would provide accident, illness, and death benefits to the employees. Then in 1912, every employee received that was on the payroll received an annual 7% bonus. Then in 1917, wages were increased, if you can believe it, for the first time since 1877. In 40 years, they hadn't had an increase in their wages. So they did receive that in 1917, anywhere from 7 to 16%, depending on, you know, what their job and their responsibilities were. Then they also had one very important benefit was to the safety of the employees in the mine. In 1916, the safety department was established. And up until 1918, there was an average of 18 deaths per year at the Homestake Mine, which, to put that in perspective, the national average was just 7 per year. So it was quite high at Homestake. But after 1918, things were much improved, and only 1 to 2 deaths were reported each year at the Homestake Mine.
Mm-hmm. Did unions ever gain a foothold at Homestake again?
Boy, they sure tried. They tried and tried from 1909, I should say, when they first came in, until 1966 that a union was actually established at Homestake, and that was the United Steelworkers of America.
Brian Gevis is here with us for this week's Images of the Past, talking there with Carolyn Weber, the director of Deadwood History, Inc. And you can find more on this on sdpb.org/images of the past. Brian, in 40 years, they hadn't had an increase.
In 40 years. Isn't that amazing?
18 deaths a year. Uh-huh. Wow, it puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
I just find it really worth noting that the company and labor were able to work things out in a mostly amicable way. Although there was this threat that something could be sparked up by a militant labor union, it never happened, and things worked out well.
Right.
And of course, Homestake Mine ceased production at the end of 2001, and it is now the home of the Sanford Underground Research Facility.
Right. But at what cost to those families and the ones who had to move? We don't know what happened to them. So, you know, we say they worked it out, you know, without violence, but certainly there's an impact of starvation or loss or sickness or
certainly
or, yeah on that human
certainly
human
but when
scale.
You look at some of the incidents farther west where you had dynamiting and you had people being killed and shot by National Guard soldiers, and you had the head of the union being hauled in on murder charges in Idaho, I think management saw that coming, and they said, look, we got to do whatever we have to do to not let that happen here.
Is there a legacy of this time in the community of Lead itself?
At this time?
Well, just after the lockout, were there other positive things that sort of happened in the community as things started to change a little bit?
Well, I think the fact that they were able to continue operation, for many years after without significant labor issues certainly says something.
Brian Gevick in Vermilion, thank you so much for your time today. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Lori.
And you can find Brian's excellent work online, sdpb.org/images of the past, for this week's story on the Homestake Mine. You can see, and the lockout, you can see pictures and artifacts.